You're listening to Air Schooner, listening that moves you. Hosted by Stacy Waite and Scott Winter.
I definitely think my work's weird. The stuff I love to read is also weird. You know, I'm a big fan of, like, George Saunders and Amy Bender and Kelly Link, people that don't shy away from writing something that's really bizarre. And I definitely like to have something weird going on in the story. I think for me that's sort of the hook, you know. Then it's like maybe I don't have to write it so spectacularly well because the story itself will be so interesting no one will even notice.
She's Stacy Waite.
And he's Scott Winter. And you just heard Aubrey Hirsch talking about the weirdness of some of the stories in her latest collection, Why We Never Talk About Sugar, out just this past year.
Today, Air Schooner has brought together some voices of fiction writers who we thought were doing some work that you might characterize as wonderfully strange or even, as Hirsch puts it, weird.
Along with Hirsch, we're going to hear from two other novelists who also happen to be poets, Dave Newman and Shavisa Woods. But first, let's get back to Aubrey Hirsch, born in Cleveland, Ohio, three-time Pushcart Prize nominee, who was a finalist in Glimmer Train's Fiction Open. Here's Hirsch reading from a story called Pinocchio.
Now that Pinocchio is finally a real boy, he understands that what he really wants to be is a woman. He knows he has to tell his father, Geppetto, who spent his whole life longing for a son. Dad, he says, I need to talk to you about something. He looks around his father's small house. It seems much smaller now that Pinocchio is grown up. From the kitchen, he can see Geppetto's studio, littered with puppets flung about like tiny, dead bodies. You know what you always say about making the puppets? That you can tell what's inside the chunk of pine even before you start carving it? That you just know? Geppetto nods. He carries a basket of bread to the table with arthritic fingers. I know something, too, Pinocchio says, about what I am inside. He tells Geppetto that although he gave him the features of a boy and a boy's name, he guessed wrong when he picked up this particular piece of pine. With that story, I've been working on a series of flashes that I call counterfactual biographies that are sort of fictional stories about historical figures. And obviously, Pinocchio is not actually a historical figure, as he himself is fictional. But I have been writing these stories, and I think there's just something about that phrase, real boy, that like rings strangely in my ears. I've always been really interested in writing about gender and in stories about gender, and that phrase, real boy, is just everywhere in the Pinocchio mythology. And the story occurred to me first as that first line, that, you know, once Pinocchio finally became a real boy, maybe he decides he really wants to be a woman. I don't know.
I love that phrase, counterfactual biographies. And the thing I think is awesome about Hirsch's story is that while at first glance a reader could think, wow, that's weird that she turned Pinocchio into a woman, but really the story itself highlights what's actually weird, which is that there is such a thing as a real boy or a real girl in the first place.
Wow, nothing better than gender analysis from our Air Schooner gender expert, Stacy Waite. And Hirsch told Stacy some even cooler weird stuff about what she found in some research for this story.
When I have an idea for one of these little stories, then I do a ton of research. Probably about 90% of the time, they don't go anywhere because there's just nothing really to grab onto. But with Pinocchio, the more I read about it, the more I felt like it fit. You know, there's that whole weird scene where he goes to the island with all the boys and they're all like terrible people and they get turned into donkeys and all they do is drink and gamble. And everyone in the Pinocchio universe is a man. You know, there's just Geppetto and Monstro and Jiminy Cricket. The only female presence in that story at all is the Blue Fairy, who comes from Pinocchio's imagination. You know, she's not even real. So the more I read about it, the more I felt convinced that I had discovered the real story.
Speaking of boys and drinking, those are two of the subjects that come up in our next author's reading. But he can tell you about the expertise about to read way better than I can. So here's Dave Newman telling us about and reading from his most recent novel called Raymond Carver Will Not Raise Our Children.
I'm going to read a little bit from my novel, Raymond Carver Will Not Raise Our Children. I'm actually going to read a part where there's a mention of Raymond Carver. I think it's the only part where Carver's mentioned in the book, and it's about two professors who work on yearly contracts, and both who are pretty poor, are getting ready to go into a Target to steal basketball shoes for one of their children. They're broke and the kid needs new shoes. It's winter, so I can fit two bottles of beer in the front pockets of my Navy P-code. Then, when I'm inside of Target and finished with the beers and drunk, I can ditch the bottles and make space for a new pair of basketball shoes, size 7. James says, "The beer bottles will draw attention to us." I say, "We'll be discreet." We park in the side lot by the buggy corral. James wants to smoke a joint. Even though he doesn't drink, except for now, he's never stopped smoking pot. Last summer, I read the new Ray Carver biography. Ray Carver was an alcoholic short story writer and poet who quit drinking but still smoked a lot of dope. James lights the joint. James is an alcoholic. He hits the end. I am not an alcoholic. I hit the end. When I'm stuck on the dives of my life and the wrong choices I've made, I often think of Ray Carver and how he got famous, then sober, then abandoned his first family and found a new lover, and how he married his new lover, then signed over his entire literary estate to her, his new second wife, rumored witch and a lousy poet. I take another hit and hand the joint back to James. I open another beer. James blows on the end of the joint. He eats the smoke like a fish going for food. It's important to think and act like this when you are going to steal something that you cannot afford. When James and I die, we will have nothing to leave anyone. Ray Carver's kids got a couple grand. His first wife, who Carver almost killed when he beat her with a wine bottle and the jagged edge sliced her throat, got less. So Ray Carver is dead and famous, and I am drunk and stoned, and James is drunk and stoned, and Ray Carver's kids have nothing, and I want my kids to have something, and Ray Carver's second wife, the lousy poet, gets to live off his royalties. I don't want a second wife. I want my first wife, my only wife, to have time and money and love. Carver's first wife, the one he almost killed, is out in the Northwest, collecting food stamps and delivering pizzas.
While I didn't ask Dave Newman about his research on Carver, I did ask him about the kind of strangeness that appears in his work.
The strangeness I like is stuff that's like hyper-real, and it kind of plays with reality in a way that you can't tell it's playing with reality, or so it appears to be its own reality. Sometimes when things get like really strange for me when I'm reading it, like what's the bizarro fiction movement that's going on or whatever, it just gets stupid for me. So I like, a strangeness that comes from life, to something that's really genuine that maybe we don't recognize but literature can point out, as opposed to something that's manufactured to go over the top.
I wonder if Newman would count Hirsch's Pinocchio story as too bizarro, or maybe that play on realness that Hirsch talked about is actually in line with Newman's assessment.
David Newman's a really interesting guy. He's the author of several poetry chapbooks and two novels. You can find his work in publications like 5AM, Chiron Review, and Rattle. And the novel he read to us from was just released from Writer's Tribe Books in 2012. Newman talked to me a bit more about the novel and about what he found strange about some of the heroes, like Carver, that he had as a young writer.
There was this romanticism for years of writers as bad people, and that was great. The more they drank and the worse they treated people, it was like the more they were dedicated to their art. And I think the book's trying to go against that and saying that, is it possible to be a decent person, to be a decent partner, to whoever you love, and to be a decent parent and be a good friend, while at the same time somehow managing to find time to be creative and make art.
We say perhaps the highest score on the strangest meter for last on our episode today. Shavisa Woods is a Brooklyn-based writer who was nominated for a Lambda Literary Award for her first collection of short stories entitled Love Does Not Make Me Gentle or Kind. Her first novel is entitled The Albino Album.
It's a queer epic about a little girl who accidentally feeds her mother to an albino tiger and grows up to become a domestic terrorist. I know what everyone's thinking out there, that it's been done and done again, but... So I'm going to read a quick excerpt. This is the main character, Maya. her nickname is Maya, her name is otherwise unpronounceable, has been traveling around the country on an albino horse named Arian, blowing things up. But recently her horse was stolen, and she's now in New Orleans looking for the horse. This chapter is from the perspective of Idrissa, who is a political advocate there who works for an organization that might remind you a bit of Acorn. And he's a very uptight person. He's originally from Western Africa. He's secretly intersexed and lives his life as a male, and he's just meeting Maya for the first time in a cafe. I would not have even noticed her, would not have turned my head to look at her if it hadn't been for that wretched smell. At first, I thought it might be a leak in a pipe. I could not, for those first few seconds, imagine that smell might be emanating from any sort of human being. It was a thick cloud of mildew that crept up my nostrils, some hybrid of mold, wet tobacco, and rotten tomatoes. I glanced side to side, up and around, then followed my nostrils to the obvious source of the offense. Sniffing the whole time and having now leaned into her personal sphere, I abruptly realized why the two seats on either side of her had remained empty and what it was Sheila had been wiggling her nose about. Her eyes caught mine. I too froze, gave a startled look, and nodded politely, embarrassed at my own rudeness, as I was now just a few inches away from her noxious head of hair, which crowded her like a black bird nest recently blown aloft by some violent storm. I sat back quickly and sipped at my tea. The smell grew stronger as she leaned over on her elbow, her face now just inches away from mine. "You need something, princess?" she asked, a playful malice showing in her tone. Sheila inquired, with watchful eyes, over the edge of her paper. Perhaps the first time she said it, she meant nothing by it. Perhaps it was something she would have called any man she was harassing, but the word princess cut me to the core. The muscles in my face went visibly to war with each other. I did not turn to look at her, for fear of giving something away that I could not afford to give.
Stacy really had no choice but to ask Woods if she thought her own work was weird, and Woods got a kick out of that.
I think it's batshit crazy. You're gonna bleep that. Do I think my work is weird? Yeah, it is definitely weird, and I'm proud of that. Yeah.
You know, Scott, I wondered if any of the writers I talked to were going to be offended or taken aback when I wrote to them to say, like, hey, do you want to come on Air Schooners? We can talk about how weird your work is. But I have to say, all three writers were really flattered by the characterization.
Yeah, I think all of us who write like to think of ourselves as a bit strange, or at least think of ourselves as having a viewpoint that's new or somewhat experimental.
And in that sense, we're not that different from scientists. Just ask Aubrey Hirsch.
I do think stories in some ways are always experiments. You're always kind of in the lab shifting things around, and sometimes it works and you come out with what you want, and then other times it sort of explodes into a giant disaster. But yeah, I think we're all experimenting, really.
Thanks to Aubrey Hirsch, Dave Newman, and Shavisa Woods, our three wonderfully strange fiction writers on the show today.
And thanks to you, our listeners, for checking out this episode of Air Schooner.
Air Schooner is available on iTunes. Sign up now to subscribe. You'll be the first of your hip friends to get the latest episode, and you can download all past episodes all the way back to the premiere show, featuring Nulani Krohor's Irish poetry. Want to enjoy Prairie Schooner on an e-reader? Now you can. Visit Amazon.com to buy the current issue of Prairie Schooner for only $6.99.
Air Schooner is a bi-weekly product of Prairie Schooner and produced with research support from Eric Jones and Marianne Kunkel. Production assistants are Catherine Larson and Franny Sprowls. Technical support comes from Rick Alloway of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln's College of Journalism and Mass Communications. Air Schooner is produced by Scott Winter and the brainchild of executive producer Kwame Dawes.